So tonight we get to one of the last stories that we have in the book of Acts. It's in Acts chapter 27. And that's where I would encourage you to look tonight. We'll spend a lot of time looking at this chapter. But in Acts chapter 27, as you saw from the masterful skit that was done, no wonder they had a shipwreck. That many people in that little of a boat. It's a wonder they made it as far as they did. And, you know, when you've got Daniel Jenkins and Nathaniel Nelson and Casey Haynes and Braden Gillis, who else was in there? And Cam Crotts, Harrison. That's an accident waiting to happen, you know. Maybe that gave you a different picture of what they went through, and no wonder those four anchors didn't do anything when they threw them off the backside. Acts chapter 27. It is interesting when you go to this chapter. We're not going to look at this tonight, but it's interesting to me to read the details that Luke gives in Acts chapter 27. Luke gives details of locations and names of locations. Luke gives details of names of people. Luke gives details about the route that they took and the reason that they took it. When you read Acts chapter 27, this has been one of the targets of critics who try to go to the Bible and try to prove that the Bible doesn't know what it's talking about, and they like to pick on Luke and claim that here was a guy writing about names of places and people and events, and he didn't know what he was talking about. And yet there have been those who have taken the book of Acts, have gone over to that land, and their attempt was to destroy the book of Acts with the findings that they could make in those lands. And what happened was that it did just the opposite. The book of Acts was proven over and over to be accurate. And it's no different when you get to Acts chapter 27. That the accuracy of the comments and the details that are given here are astounding. But we've been looking at four C's, and tonight is this fourth one on the fact that we need to be, just as Paul was, need to be courageous. Because God is always there to take care of us. And we have tried the first three nights. We tried to develop some points that would also start with the letter C, just so that when you leave here, you're really on the high C's. And the first night we had seven C's. Second night we had seven C's. Last night I ended up with seven C's. So I've been trying all day to come up with seven C's that would be different than the seven C's that we had any other night. And so some of these might be a bit of a stretch, you might think, but that's fine. You see if you can come up with some better ones while we're at it. But let's look at Acts 27. And before we get to these seven C's tonight, we're going to do a quick glance through this chapter. Before we look at Paul being courageous, I want you to see what he was dealing with, not just him, but everybody in that ship. What they were going through in Acts chapter 27. And this is going to be on the screen, but I want you to look in your Bible. Look in Acts chapter 27, verse 4. When we had put to sea, Acts 27, verse 4, when we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus. Why? Because the winds were constantly contrary to us. Here's Paul and 275 other people in the boat. Look in verse 7. We sailed slowly many days, and we arrived with difficulty when we got there. Look in verse 8, where it says that they were passing or sailing by it with difficulty. This is not the task that they were going through was not easy. Look in verse 9. Now when much time had been spent and the sailing was now dangerous. It was the time of year. It gives us the time of year. It's after the fast, this part of the Day of Atonement. This time of year, between September and November especially, they didn't go sailing out on the Mediterranean because of the storms. And usually all traffic was stopped until mid-March. This was the dangerous time to be out on the sea. Drop down to verse 10. Verse 10, Paul says, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster. That was his opinion. That's what he thought was going to happen just because of the time of year. Look in verse 12. They were in a harbor, but the harbor was not one that was suitable to winter in. So they were going to try to leave that harbor and go just about 50 miles to the west to get to a different harbor that would be better for the winter. Look in verse 14. Not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose. They had a name for this. The word tempestuous in this verse comes from a Greek word from which we get the word typhoon. It's not some little rainstorm that comes up. It's like a typhoon that has come upon the sea, and sailors had a special name for this particular kind of storm. Look in verse 15. When the ship was caught. It's in the storm. You think about a fish being caught. When the ship was caught in the middle of this storm, and they could not head into the wind, they had to let the wind drive them. Look in verse 16. There was a skiff. What's a skiff? Small boat. Does your translation say small boat? There was a small boat, and they had to secure it. But verse 16 says they had to secure it, but it was with difficulty that they tried to secure it to the larger boat. Look at verse 17. When they brought the skiff on board, they then repeatedly used cables. The verb indicates they did it over and over, using cables to undergird. Again, the verb means over and over. They were trying to undergird the ship over and over with these cables. For what reason? They're trying to hold this ship together. How big is a ship that holds 267 people? A little bigger than the one you saw on stage, right? You hope. Large enough to hold 267 people, and they are trying to use as many cables as they can to hold this thing together. They were constantly, verse 17, middle of it says, constantly they were in fear, thinking they were going to run aground, and so they lowered the gear, the Old American Standard says, maybe even talking about their sea anchor. They dropped their sea anchor to let it go, perhaps so that they could lighten the load. They were exceedingly and repeatedly, verse 18 says, tempest-tossed. They're at the mercy of the sea. They're at the mercy of the wind that's in the sea. In verse 18, they lighten the ship even further, trying to get rid of some of the cargo. Verse 19, they lighten the ship even further, trying to get rid of some of the tackle and some of the equipment. Luke says that we even threw it over with our own hands. In verse 20, it says that the sun and the stars had not appeared. And again, the verb indicates repeated. They had not appeared for many days. Was that some type of miraculous event that they hadn't appeared? They're covered up. They're in a storm so much that they had not seen the sun. When is the sun out, day or night? They had not seen the stars. When are the stars out, day or night? How did the sailors get their bearings to even know where they were in the sea? If you can't see the stars, if you can't see the sun, you have no idea where you are. That'd be a comforting feeling, right? To be tempest-tossed, being tossed about by this sea, and you don't know where you are. You haven't seen the sun or the moon for quite some time. Verse 20, New King James says that there was no small tempest, which means they were all big ones, that kept on beating on us. Verse 20 says, all hope that we would have, that we would be saved, it was diminishing and diminishing and diminishing, and finally, all hope was finally given up. Verse 21 indicates that they had a long abstinence from food, even 14 days worth. Verse 22, Paul says that they had incurred disaster and loss by the things that were happening there. But Paul assured them, I guess this was assuring, he said, there will be the loss of the ship. I know he said you won't lose your life. But he says, guys, the ship that you're on, it's going to crash. Oh, good. That makes me feel so much better now. To know that I'm on a boat and I'm going to live, but we're going to crash. I'm looking forward to that event. So Paul says, it's not that we might run aground. He says we must run aground on a certain island. 14 days and nights had come and gone. Can you imagine spending 2 weeks in these conditions? Nope. 2 weeks. No sun or stars. Hadn't been eating. I hesitate to ask this, but can you imagine what the sickness would have been like on that ship? There may have been a reason they were not eating. The less you eat, you got the picture, right? 14th night had come. Look at verse 27. They were continually, the verb indicates, continually driven up and down on the sea. They were going in every direction possible. So at about midnight, why is it that all of this stuff happens in the middle of the night? Last night, the story we looked at in Acts 16, it was midnight. Here we go again. Have you ever wondered that? How is it that things always happen in the middle of the night? How is it that you get those phone calls and it's always 2 o'clock in the morning? How is it that you know, when you need a doctor most, it's middle, you know, why did... That's when babies are born. Or they're born the next morning, but you're in labor all night. Okay, never mind. So, everything happens at midnight. They were drawing near some land. Look at verse 29. They were constantly still, constantly fearing, because now they were afraid they were going to run aground on some rocks. So this is where they dropped 4 small anchors. Probably not to hold the ship, but to help give it some drag, to maybe be able to direct it and to control it a little bit better. And the Bible, depending on what translation you have, says that they prayed for daylight. Have you ever done that? Something ever happened in the middle of the night and you're just praying, God, would you please just let the sun come up? Please let me just make it through the night. That's what they're praying. At least that's what they're wishing. If they're not praying, it's what they're longing for and wishing, that they could make it through the night. And so, verse 30, there were some sailors who thought, well, I'm not going to stay on board here. Paul says the ship's going to be lost, so we're out of here. There were some sailors who tried escaping from the ship, but Paul told them in verse 31, guys, you can't be saved if you do that. Don't try to leave. You can't be saved. Look at verse 33. Verse 33, it was about the dawn of this day that they had been wishing for. Paul says, you've been waiting. You've been continuing without food. You haven't eaten for 14 days. So they ate and then they lightened the ship. What was left on the ship to lighten it with? The food. I mean, they've gotten rid of the heavy stuff. They've gotten rid of the equipment. They've gotten rid of their tackle. Now they're getting rid of the food. There's hardly anything left on the ship to throw overboard. Would you like to be on this ship? You know, when you go on a cruise, the best thing about the cruise is the food, right? They just threw it all overboard. You know, I mean, what's the deal with that? You don't eat for 14 days and then you eat something and then they throw it overboard. Wonder how good that food was. Been sitting around for 2 weeks. Maybe the food was soaked, who knows, from water coming overboard. Where are we? Look at verse 39. When it was day, they were coming to land. Finally, they're coming to land, but they have no idea where they are. They didn't recognize the land. Could that be a problem? Oh, great, we're finally going to make it to land. What if there's cannibals when they get there? Oh, great, we finally made it to land. They don't recognize where they are. They have not seen, apparently, this side of Malta Melita before. And so they're coming to a land, they don't recognize it. So they develop a plan. All right, here's what we're going to do. Our plan is we're going to run this ship ashore. If you were on a ship and you found out that the captain and the crew, they had come up with a plan. What are we going to do? We're going to run it ashore. That's what I want to do, right? You know, they put up a sail that's going to drag them right in. Okay, could you let me off? You know, maybe a couple yards from shore. You know, I'll watch y'all crash if you want me to, but can you let me out of here? Look in, where are we? Verse 40. They took those 4 anchors. They let them go. It's It's interesting that it just says they left him in the sea. Is that a good sight? You cut your anchors. Think we might need them later? No, we're just going to let... Oh, we don't need anchors anymore. That's not a good sign. So we don't need anchors anymore. We're going to cut them, let them go to the bottom of the sea. And as they go, they loose the rudders, the rudder ropes. They hoisted the foresail or the mainsail, depending on what translation you have. And they were making a beeline right for the shore. The prow of the boat... What part of the boat is that? The front. The front of the boat got stuck in a reef. And it remained immovable. Well, that's not a big deal. Because if the front's immovable, then maybe the back's immovable too, right? Not this ship. The front's immovable, but what's happening to the back of this ship? The Greek indicates that it was being, present tense, over and over and over and over, being broken up by this force of waters that kept crashing and crashing and crashing against it. Where are all the 276 people? They're on board. They're either stuck in the front or they're getting whipped around in the back. You think they're going to ask for a refund if they ever get back to land? So the soldiers, just like you saw in the skit, they said, you know what? So much for these prisoners. I'm not going to be responsible for them. Let's kill them. I want you to put yourself in Paul's shoes. Put yourself in anybody's shoes. Put yourself in Luke's shoes. Luke is there. Put yourself in their shoes, and they've gone through all of this. And I want you to look at this question mark up here. Seriously? Is this a moment where you're going to be courageous? At a moment when all of this has transpired over the last 2 weeks, how courageous are you going to be? The sea, it's against you. The wind, it's against you. The sun and the moon and the stars, they're against you. The soldiers, they're against you. You know, the cook, apparently, he's against you. I mean, everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Courage is the last thing you're thinking about at that point. But when we look at Paul in this chapter, it's a story about courage. Very quickly, I want us to look at seven C's that can show us where this courage came from. First of all, I want you to think about the fact that Paul was consigned. What in the world does that mean? The only thing we know like that's like a consignment shop, right? Paul was consigned. What does that mean? Paul had determined, even before he got on this ship at Crete, Paul had determined that he was not in control. When Paul was being tempest-tossed for 14 days, was he in control? Was the captain in control? Was the centurion in control? Before Paul ever got on the ship, when Paul was standing before King Agrippa, when Paul... Everything that's happened in the life of Paul had consigned himself to the fact that God is in control. I'm not saying that he was in control of those winds and the waves and that God was beating this ship to pieces. But in the midst of the storm, how helpless would you have felt in that ship? When it says that all hope had been given up, you say, yep, probably happened that first night. How helpless would you feel? Where could you go? You are somewhere in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. You don't know where. You could be close to land. You could be close to rocks. You could be in the middle of nowhere. And at that moment of feeling helpless, Paul had already determined, I'm okay. Because God, my Father, is in control. You saw it as we were looking through some of those verses, and I would encourage you to go and read the chapter, that three times in this chapter talks about the difficulty they were having. Three times in this chapter talks about fear and being afraid. Nine times in this chapter it uses the word wind or the word tempest. This is a horrible situation. But Paul says, no, It might be horrible circumstances that I have found myself in, but there's one fact that has not changed. There's one fact that will never change. There's one fact that even if I deny it as being true, still will never change. And that is that God is in control. It is God who is sitting on not just any throne, He is sitting on the throne. He is sitting on His throne. Where is His throne? It's in heaven. Can His throne be, can it be affected by a tempest? Can His throne be affected by a tornado? Can His throne, could it be destroyed by a flood? No. His throne is in heaven. And from heaven, our Almighty God rules over all. Is there anything that's going to happen to your God? Is there any reason that we should not consign ourselves, yield ourselves, submit ourselves, subject ourselves, surrender ourselves, whatever verb you want there if you don't like the one consigned, to say, I'm not in control, but I want my God to be in control. I want my God to be on the throne, not me. Sometimes we try to put ourselves on the throne, get ourselves in trouble. That's not God's plan. God is in control. In Psalm 89, it says that from His throne, righteousness and justice are the very foundation. God's throne's not going to crumble. God's throne is going to be fair, just. God's throne is going to be pure and right. And flowing out from His throne is mercy, the New King James says. New American Standard, I think it is, it uses the word loving kindness. From His throne and all around Him protrudes loving kindness and mercy and truth. Aren't you glad that you serve a God? That it doesn't matter what storms of life encircle you. It doesn't matter if they're in the daytime or the nighttime. And it doesn't matter that if they're happening at such a time, you don't even know if it's daytime or nighttime like they didn't know on the sea. Does God know if it's daytime or if it's nighttime? Does God know what time it is? Here was one of His children, more than one of His children. There were at least three Christians who were on that boat. There was Paul. There was Luke. In verse 2, they mention Aristarchus, who's also mentioned earlier in the book of Acts and in some of Paul's writings. At least three Christians are on that boat. So let's see, there's 200, how many people? 276 people. What verse is that in? Verse 37. 276 people. Three of them we know are children of God. So the other 273 have got it good because there's three children of God who are on that throne who know God is in control. I hope that in our courage and in our desire to be courageous as Christians, that we'll first consign ourselves to the fact that we're not the ones who are in control, that God is in control, and that God is able to make all things work together for our good. And I wish we had time to talk about that. Second C I want us to talk about is that Paul was contented. You read all of this bad stuff that's happening in Acts chapter 27, and you never read about Paul being unruffled. Now that has nothing to do with the potato chips, all right? That just means there was nothing that got Paul rocking, okay? His boat was rocking, but his boat hadn't got rocked yet. Does that make sense? I don't even know. I'm trying to see if that makes sense to me. All of this happening in the life of Paul, and the only verse that gives us any indication that Paul was probably afraid too. You know, we put Paul on a pedestal and think, boy, he was super Christian and nothing ever got to him. But when the angel came and spoke to Paul in what, verse 22, verse 23, what verse is that, where the angel comes and speaks to Paul, and he says to Paul, verse 24, "Do not be afraid." Does that mean that Paul was probably afraid? I mean, you don't tell somebody don't be afraid if they're not afraid. Paul was like anybody else on that boat. He was fearful. He was afraid. Angel says, don't be afraid. But you read about Paul, and it doesn't appear that on this occasion that there was anything that was ruffling his feathers. Look at what happens. In verses 11 and 12 is where Paul, in verse 10, had stated his opinion, this is going to end badly. And the centurion chooses to listen to the majority. I think it's in verse 12 where you have the word majority. The centurion chose to listen to everybody else instead of Paul. Would that have bothered you? If you gave sound advice and the guy just dismissed it, to listen to everybody else. Think about the fact that when you read this chapter, there are people who are fearful. There are people who are cowards. There are people who are deceitful on the boat. When they threw out the four anchors, it says that there were soldiers who went and they were acting like they were throwing out other anchors. But what were they doing? Letting down the skiff so they could jump in it and get out of there. Deceitfully, they're trying to escape from that boat. And that's when Paul said, if y'all leave, nobody's going to be saved. And they spent 2 weeks in conditions that you and I can't even fathom. But Paul, in the midst of all of this, seemed to be contented with what was happening with him. Think about these points. Paul told everyone there twice, guys, take heart. What does that mean, to take heart? Say again. Be courageous. Guys, be courageous. Take courage. Everything is going to be all right. He encouraged them to eat when they hadn't been eating for several days. And when Paul got ready to eat that two-week-old food, isn't it interesting that it says that he gave thanks? At this point, we won't be able to make it later on, but did he give thanks silently? When you look in chapter 27, where is that? That's down in the early 30s in the verses, right? 35. When he had said these things, he took bread, gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. Did they all know what he was doing? Yeah. Did they know that he was saying thank you to God? Here was Paul. He seemed, as much as we can see, a bit unfazed by what was happening. How could he be so courageous? Because he had determined to be contented before God. Philippians chapter 4, and this is a different context, but you see the same word, where Paul says in Philippians 4, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Now that's talking about the fact that he knew how to abound and how to be abased. He knew how to have a lot and how to have a little. But here, when he's about as bad as it can get, Paul says, I've learned how to be content before God. If you're contented before God, you can be courageous. Third C I want us to look at tonight is that Paul was concerned about somebody else other than Paul. You want to learn to be courageous with God? Selfishness isn't going to get us there. Being only concerned about number one is not going to get us there. You read this chapter, and unless you try to infer some things into the words of Paul, you don't see Paul being selfish in this chapter. Here's a prisoner. And it's interesting in this story that this prisoner, you've got the centurion, a Roman official, a Roman soldier. You've got the centurion. You've got the captain of the boat and the owner of the boat on board. Then you've got these other passengers, apparently, I guess. Then you've got the prisoners. And as you read through chapter 7, one of these prisoners named Paul goes from being the prisoner to being the one who's in charge. When those guys tried getting off the boat and Paul says, unless you stay on board, you're not going to be saved, what'd they do? Cut, let it go. All of a sudden, he went from being a prisoner to being the one everybody who was listening to. Why? Because Paul didn't show any selfishness while he's on board. He's concerned about other people. Look at some of these things. He told them, take heart, for there will be no loss of life. He didn't say, hey guys, take heart, I'm not going to die. Don't worry about it, I'm going to be just fine in this thing. No, there's not going to be any loss of life among you. He was told that God has given all of those who sail with you into your hand. In verse 31, here it is, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Why didn't Paul just let them get off the ship? Well, I'll show them. If they want to go, okay, but something bad's going to happen to them.
David,
yes, sir?
The other thing, we shouldn't have laughed.
Well,
he was encouraging all the way through it.
Yeah, look in verse 30, 20, where is it? 20. Oh, where's the verse? I was thinking it was like 22. Verse 21, that's where it is, the verse before it. But after long abstinence from food, Paul stood in the midst of them, and he said, this is New King James, men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. We would say, I told you so. But you know, I don't read that as a snarky teenage response. Ha ha ha. See, I told you. You know, that's what we would do. We'd stick it to them. Mm-hmm. I don't read it as Paul saying, yeah, I told you so, although that's the words. I see it as a lead in to his next statement. Guys, you didn't listen to me the first time. And now here we are. You should have listened to me. Now I'm going to say something else. Guys, you need to listen to this. Back in verse 10, that was my opinion. You didn't listen to it. Now here we are. Verse 22, guys, this is not my opinion. This is the Word of God. You didn't listen to me before. Okay, you'd better listen to this now. He's concerned about everybody else on board, even not only himself. And this is where he tells them to take food. He says, take nourishment because this is for your survival. And he tells them that not one hair, what'd they say in the skit? I almost missed what they said in the skit. I was wondering if their hair was going to grow back or something from the line they used in the skit. Not one hair is going to fall from your head. When Paul was on board, would this have been an easy time to be only concerned about himself? If your ship was going down, you know what they do, right? Ladies and children first. Onto the lifeboats. Was it on this boat? Was it apostle and ladies and children first? Is that how it worked? Because I'm more important than anybody on this boat. Because you know I'm an apostle, and as an apostle, I've got a more important work than anybody else here. So if anybody's going to be saved, it's going to be me. So put me in the skiff and get me out of here. It was not about him. Paul was a courageous man, and that was exhibited by the fact that he was concerned more about other people than he was about himself. What do we got? We got 9 minutes. Four more C's. Paul was conviction-filled. He was conviction-driven. Here's my favorite part of this chapter. Look in verse 24. Look in verse 22. I urge you to take heart. He says in verse 22, for there will be no loss of life. For there stood by me this night an angel of who? Nope, none of you got it right. None of you got it right. For there stood by me this night an angel of the God. It's not just an angel of some God. There stood by me this night an angel of the God. There is no other God. The God that I serve, guys, you need to hear this. Those of you who are seeking yourself selfishly here, you need to hear that there's only one God. And there stood by me this night an angel of the God. And what does Paul say about this God? It is this God to whom I belong. Well, Paul, if your God is so great, he wouldn't have let this bad stuff happen to you. Think somebody said that? You know, Paul, if your God is so loving and so wonderful, then why is he letting all this bad stuff happen to you and to us? He must not be the kind of God that you've been saying he is. You ever heard somebody say something like that? Paul says, I belong to the God. I'm not my own. I've been bought with a price. And so even here in the midst of this tempest tossed, I'm going to glorify the God to whom I belong. And it's not just the God I belong to, it's the God whom I serve. Was Paul serving the God even in the midst of a storm? Even when his life was in jeopardy? Paul says, I had standing beside me an angel of the God to whom I belong, the God whom I serve. And here's what he said in verse 24. He said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all of those who sail with you. Therefore, take heart, men, he says, for, and here's the third time he uses this pronoun I in these three verses. Why should they take heart? Because I believe God. See, there is the God and I belong to Him, guys. You don't need to be afraid. And there is the God and I serve Him. Both of those are present tense verbs. I am continually belonging to Him. I am continually serving Him. And I am continually believing in Him. This little storm is not going to stop me from believing God. What does he say in verse 25? I believe God that it will be just as he told me. Where does courage come from? Courage comes from being convicted and having conviction fill up your heart that says, no matter what happens to me, no matter what other people do to me, or just no matter what life circumstances may bring, I belong to the God, period. I serve the God, period. And I believe. Notice it's not I believe in God. It's not that I believe God exists. He believes that. But I believe God. That it's going to be just like He said that it would be. And if God said that we're going to make it through this, if God said it, that settles it. And it was through his abiding confidence in God, in the God, that he was able to have such courage. Moving kind of quick, three more C's here. Paul was certain, and this may be a little redundant, you might think with some of that, but look in verse 20, chapter 27, verse 20. Bible says that all hope had been given up. Do you think Paul's hope had been given up? Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, for we walk by what? Faith and not by sight. Do you think you can sail by faith and not by sight? I'm scared to ask this one. Do you think you can drive by faith and not by sight? All the time. That's great. Okay, I'm not going home tonight. I'll just stay here until somebody's up in Martin County. Okay, is it possible we walk by faith, not by sight? What was Paul seeing on that ship? He was seeing the storm. He was seeing the effects of the storm. He was seeing the crew and what was happening. He was seeing all of this bad stuff. If you walk by sight, if you sail by sight, if you live by sight, oh boy, things are going to be depressing, aren't they? You're not going to be very courageous if you're living by sight. You're going to be as discouraged as you can get. Paul wasn't discouraged. Paul was certain. He was certain that he was serving a God that would keep his word. It will be just as he told me. When God says there's not going to be any loss of life in verse 22, I believe what he says in verse 25. It's going to happen. I have no doubt about it. He is certain. It doesn't matter what my eyes see. The eye of faith sees what, hears what God has said and counts on it all the way. In verse 31, where those men are trying to get off the ship, notice what Paul says to them. And I want you to just kind of tuck this away and go and look at this later. But are the promises of God conditional? God had promised, everybody stays on the ship, there will be no loss of life. Verse 31, Paul says, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. What had to happen for them to be saved? Any question? They had to stay in the ship. God's promises are conditional. Think about this. Unless a man be born of water and the Spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. Is that not the same exact sentence structure? Can I enter the kingdom of God without being born again? Unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. Same sentence structure. God's promises are conditional. Paul knew that, and he was certain that God was going to keep his promises. Real quick, we're going to be out of time. Sixth C, Paul was courageous because he had connections. Where was the angel? He was standing right there beside me. And he told Paul, God has granted these things to you. Paul had connections. That's what gave him courage. Do you have connections? Sometimes people say it's not what you know, it's who you know. Do you have connections? Who do you know? Because of Paul's connections in heaven, everybody on that ship was saved. Last thing I want us to see, and that is that courage can be contagious. Why did that centurion have so much respect for Paul? There was something about Paul's courage that grabbed him. And when Paul took something to eat and he told everybody else to eat, it says down in verse 36, they were all encouraged by what Paul did. Can fear be contagious? Can panic be contagious? Yeah. Can courage in God? Can confidence that God will take care of us, can that be contagious? Paul was a courageous man. And even in the midst of storms, he knew that God was going to take care of him. May we have that kind of courage to look at these seas, to adopt these seas into our life, so that even when storms come upon us, we can know that God is there.